we need to design for a different metric and a different way of measuring success. My thesis on what the education system should be aiming for is increasing kids' love of learning, including very challenging and tough ones. Kids playing on top sports teams don't expect an easy ride, but they're there and they're for it. How do they get there? That should be the common factor across all learning experiences and the most important factor.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Amir Nathu, who is the co-founder and CEO of OutSchool. So Amir, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thank you. Pleasure to be talking to you, Annalise.
Let's set just a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. OutSchool is a marketplace for live online classes for K-12 learners. OutSchool has helped over 1 million students explore their interests with live online classes in nearly any subject you can think of. These are unique out-of-school learning opportunities, which is awesome because OutSchool's mission is to inspire a love of learning. And OutSchool class topics range from learning social skills through Minecraft to gaming clubs to learning veterinary topics from a real live vet and so on and so forth. And so literally OutSchool offers something for nearly every interest you can imagine. And I can attest to this because we've sent numerous kiddos over the years to OutSchool when they were providing things that we just could not. And it's really, really great resource. Even sent my own kid to an OutSchool course. So, you know, Amir, give us the sort of 50,000 foot view. Other than that generic context, why was this so important when it all got started? What was the impetus or the need in that moment?
So there was multiple influences as to why I started OutSchool. Some of which were based on my own personal experience or insights. Growing up in the UK, I had a fantastic traditional education, really the best that you can get. I went to a selective state school. I studied at the University of Cambridge. But as I grew up and, you know, embarked on my career, I started to see this discrepancy between the kind of skills and knowledge that I had to pick up and use in everyday life compared with what I learned. And when it came time for me to think about my own kids' future, this was even before I had kids. I just started thinking about it because I knew I wanted to have kids. I started to realize, oh, wow, like the world's really changed in this time between, you know, me completing my formal education and graduating. And I'm no longer sure that what I want for my kids or what the kid, my kids will need for the future is going to be what I had, despite being, you know, very grateful for the opportunities that what I had opened up for me. And that got me down a rabbit hole. You know, think about, well, what is a future-proof education look like? What do kids need today? What does the world need today? And I started to realize that there were big problems, that satisfaction in the traditional education system had been declining rapidly since the 70s. And there'd been all these attempts to reform the school system and upgrade the school system in various ways, but they hadn't succeeded in addressing that fundamental trend. And I started to realize, oh, the issue here isn't that, you know, school is worse than it was in general than when I was growing up. In many ways, I think it's substantially better. It's that the way we're designing the system is wrong and can't fulfill the needs of parents who are looking towards their kids' future. And you start to think about why. And I started to realize that there's a problem here in that in the way we design school and we set a particular curriculum and core set of subjects and we try and give kids feedback and rank them according to tests, we're basically funneling kids down this really narrow path with the hope that knowledge and skills are going to help them be productive in the workplace because they're going to be big employers who want the same kinds of basic skills and are going to be happy and successful in life because they're going to be trained how to be, you know, citizens in our society. But yeah, what the workplace actually needs in the future is differentiated skills, modern differentiated skills. And rather in a globalized economy and with all the new technology that's available to us, it's far more important to have differentiation than it is to be, you know, the world's best in a very narrow set of subjects. And so we're doing kids a disservice from economic standpoints in trying to funnel them in this way. That's not to say that basic skills, there isn't a common set of basic skills that everyone should learn, but it's not enough is the point I'm making to help kids be happy and successful. And then, you know, in terms of creating citizens who are set up to be happy and effective within our society, frankly, I don't think we're doing a great job there, judging by recent trends, and we need to take a different approach. And so those are all, you know, coming from a place initially of my own reflections of what I wanted for my kids, then looking at some of the trends and realizing that something needs to change at the system level, as opposed to a lot of education innovation, which attempts to create change like within the classroom or within the context of the system itself.
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate that very much. And I agree 100%, right? You know, and we talk about that a lot on this program about, you know, the idea of what we need or what kids need today, and certainly what the world of work and industry is going to have as expectations of them is definitely not, in most cases, what we are preparing kids for. There are blissfully beautiful exceptions to that out there in the world, right? And that's partially what we talk about, you know, on this program is finding those really amazing case studies to share them out with others. But the thing I guess I'm most curious about, as you started this journey, Amir, was the fact that you, when you built OutSchool or conceived OutSchool, and please correct me if I have this wrong, you know, you really said, okay, I can't go in and fix the system, but I can provide this sort of back-end opportunity for those who either opt out. So think about homeschooling, those types of things, or alternative sort of school opportunities. Or I can fill in this space of summer, of after school, of weekend, all of those elements, which are fabulous. But I'm super curious about if you have found that the experiences that students have in OutSchools and the folks who participate in teaching, and we'll circle back around to that part in a minute, because that's the other thing that I think is super innovative about the way you've structured this, is how does that then ultimately impact that system itself, the more traditional? What are you thinking about? Because how many years in are you now with OutSchool? And I'm curious about, are you seeing other impact factors that you didn't necessarily design for?
Yeah, totally. We definitely are seeing that. And things have evolved faster than I expected when starting OutSchool. Yeah, we're 9 years into this journey now. And the way we thought about innovating and impacting the system is by starting outside of the system. And this is a very common strategy, a very well-known strategy within tech, though it's actually not adopted often enough or not used often. It's called disruption theory. It's based on Clayton Christensen's idea about how disruption happens and how incumbents or incumbent systems can fail to innovate and change. And you know, a key part of the theory is that you start out by building for the most underserved within any market. And you build something that to the mainstream would look like a toy or something that's not serious. And you do that because, you know, the most underserved by the existing system probably wants something quite different. And as a newcomer, you're differentially able to better serve those needs than an incumbent who's wedded to certain ways of thinking, of certain ways of operating. So you start there, and then you gradually make your way inwards towards the kind of the mainstream, the larger parts of the market. And, you know, I call it an outside-in strategy. You start like the furthest out, the communities who are furthest out from kind of the core of education, the subjects that are furthest away that looks most like play and edutainment. And then when I started learning more about homeschooling and the communities of families who are taking their kids outside of the regular system, you know, I immediately saw the parallel with disruption theory. I thought that if there's going to be massive, wide-scale, system-wide change in education, the innovations are likely to come from this group first. And the companies or organizations that help drive that change, again, are likely to focus on this part first. And then the strategy was, what we were going to do is we're going to build this product, we're going to build this marketplace of learning experiences for this community, learn from them in terms of how they're using it, what the value is, and then over time, package up those learnings and build our product out so we can serve a wider and wider audience and provide an on-ramp for the ideas. And part of it is, you know, some families experience a new way of their kids learning and then want to become homeschoolers or want to adopt alternative education. But it's not just about that. It's also about finding an on-ramp for those ideas to make their way into the regular system. So we serve families who aren't only homeschoolers now. We serve families who are looking to supplement their kids' education with the theory that when they get a taste of this, some of them are going to choose to go the whole hog in choosing alternatives, but many are just going to benefit from those learnings and have higher expectations or different expectations of their schools and influence system change over time. I think where I've been surprised and wrong with that thesis were the timeframes over which I thought change was possible. I assumed that, you know, widespread system change would be like a 20 or 30 year endeavor, or maybe 50. And what we were going to do here is, you know, create a great company, but the majority of our families would continue to send their kids into a traditional school system and use us as supplements. And we'd have this influence that in the long run, we were going to create this change in the world. What I think, you know, has been shocking in both a bad way for society and also a positive way from a point of view of accelerating change is, you know, the challenges in the existing system have been badly exacerbated by other social trends, accelerated by COVID, and, you know, the parent awareness of the challenges with the existing system has, you know, increased at a rate far greater than I expected. And as a result, what we're seeing now is that, you know, homeschooling, which we now talk about as being alternative education, was not really what homeschooling used to be. It now encompasses movements such as the trend of micro schools and school choice programs, ESA programs that are really, you know, growing incredibly fast in some states. That whole ecosystem has transformed and is now growing and, you know, is expected to grow even faster. And at the same time, you have terrible challenges within the traditional education system, open teacher vacancies, apparent dissatisfaction and disagreements, driven oftentimes by parent anxiety that this school isn't serving their kids for the future. Or those problems are far worse today than I expected they would be. And the need for urgent system change is greater than ever. And so I don't know exactly how it'll happen in what order, but I think even in just in this next school year, there's going to be some districts that are extraordinarily challenged and parents demanding different options for their kids and sometimes taking those options into their own hands.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
Well, there's definitely a growing trend in the U.S. and other parts of the world as well. We're seeing this trend exactly as you're talking about. And it's going to be really interesting, right? And it's, I think, one of the fascinating things that we're starting to see is how traditional districts, blessedly recognizing what's happening with their families and the pushback that's come in the sort of post-COVID space, families demanding and wanting more, as well as educators honestly saying, I don't want to do it this way any longer, right? So this is not just about a systems failure. This is really about a system finally coming to grips with its own need to shift and morph, right? And I would argue it's happening across the entirety of the system. And that we have to be super mindful of that, right? Because educators are telling us in many ways a lot of the same things that families are telling us. I don't want to teach this way. I don't want to teach this thing. I'm not engaging with my kids. I didn't go into this profession to be this automaton, basically, right? This rote that on Tuesday we have to be on page 24, you know, and if our kids look bored, I have to just keep powering through. It doesn't make any difference. So the system itself, I think, overall is just really recognizing this shift. We, you know, it's not that it's coming, it's here. And we have an obligation to sort of move forward. And so one of the things that I also think is pretty interesting about your platform is about the mechanism by which you tap into the interests and passions of kiddos by the choice they get to make, or those families get to make, for a different sort of opportunity to learn content, not just in a different way, but different content. Let's start with the fact that they're choosing to learn things that may or may not ever turn up in a traditional setting, and yet finding meaning and learning through that. And I guess that's a long way for me to say what we're starting to see, and I assume you might be seeing some of it as well, is those traditional systems now not only are recognizing all of this, but they're now drawing from the experiences you just outlined, and they're crafting internal opportunities that are almost an attempt to replicate that sort of open source knowledging. They don't know what to do with it yet. They don't know how to give credit for it yet. They don't know how to account for it yet. But we are starting to see traditional systems saying, hey, it's not just micro schools, to use that as an example, on the outside, but what happens if we bring them in?
That's so interesting that you're seeing that trend, because, you know, I think that's how system change happens. You know, I've hypothesized that in some areas of the country, the alternative ecosystem, what I might call this choice, this micro-school movement, the homeschooling movement, ESAs, becomes so adopted. At the same time, the challenges with teacher vacancies or the quality of service within the traditional system becomes so difficult that in some district somewhere, the decisions say, actually, the alternative system is the system. And that's how the new system can happen. Or the alternative is that some districts bring these innovations in fast enough that they can keep up with the demands of families, and you know, there's not that kind of system collapse. And you know, I think those are the two options. The status quo is not an option. At some point, the dissatisfaction is going to grow too great on both the parent and the teacher side. And, you know, it's really great that you call out teachers, but sometimes this kind of system change is presented, especially when there's kind of political agendas at play, as being somehow anti-teacher. Well, it's not.
It's not, yeah.
You know, the reality is that, you know, there's lots of teacher vacancies, but teachers don't like this either.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And, you know, pay is certainly a factor, but it's not just about pay. Teachers are creative professionals, and, you know, they see their creative professional colleagues in other industries able to work from home, able to work flexibly, have autonomy, have their professional judgments trusted. And they see their own working conditions, and they see the dream of what they wanted to, the impact, kind of impact they wanted to have from kids, not being possible to fulfill. So teachers absolutely want change too, by and large. I think the challenges come, you know, in the example you gave about bringing the innovations in. And okay, so, you know, some school systems are forward looking and starting to try and bring the element of choice into the classroom. And that's a great first step. And I think then what quickly happens, as you also shared, was then they struggle with how to account for that, because schools, you know, are under a great deal of scrutiny by our society. They have certain measures, but the measures, the traditional measures, don't fit apart from in a particular narrow set of subjects. Because if you do genuine personalization, which is what is needed, and allow kids to take genuinely different paths, then how do you evaluate the quality of the paths by a central set of standards? And, you know, this is something that we've had to grapple with as a marketplace, because yes, we have the core subjects. And yes, the teachers in those standards core subjects can talk about learning outcomes that took all the subjects. But what about learning math through Minecraft, where there's crossover? And it's incredibly valuable and useful, and kids love it and they learn a lot, but it's not a traditional learning mode. Or what about all of the social and emotional skills? How do you evaluate that, particularly in an online learning environment? And so I think what needs to happen is the way we evaluate these journeys has to move up a level of abstraction. Yes, within the context of a particular unit, you know, there should be defined outcomes. There should be some form of feedback and assessment process that's fitting for that subject. But in terms of the overall system, I think we need to design for a different metric and a different way of measuring success. And my thesis on what the education system as a whole, including OutSchool, but also public schools, should be aiming for is increasing kids' love of learning. Every single learning experience that kids have, including very challenging and tough ones, should act to increase a kid's lovely. That doesn't mean always give encouragement. That doesn't mean not give kind of critical feedback. You know, kids playing on top sports teams don't expect an easy ride, but they're there and they're for it. How do they get there? They weren't born automatically with enthusiasm for that particular sport. You know, that's not a genetic trait, the enthusiasm to learn. The curiosity's there, but it can then be developed into a general love of learning and then also a specific love of learning for particular subjects. And I think that should be the common factor across all learning experiences and the most important factor, far beyond any specific outcomes within a particular class or subject itself. Because if you damage a kid's love of learning, you haven't just not made progress in that subject, you have really damaged them and their potential for success and happiness.
Yeah, and potentially for a lifetime, right?
Exactly. So this should be like a Hippocratic oath for education. Do not damage, whatever you do, do not damage love of learning. And if that means other sacrifices, so be it.
I love that. Thank you for that, because it is absolutely so true, right? And, you know, one of the things that we talk about all the time at PASS Foundation within our own organization is, you know, our mission critical is, you know, we are in the business of linking learning to life. That's really important to us. But what we know through linking learning to life is exactly what you're talking about. When you do that, kids love it. You know, you talked about math and Minecraft, and yes, we do that, and we do them in person. And we've also done them during COVID online. It's really hard. You probably guys did that a lot better than we did, in all honesty, in that moment. But the reality is that we see it doesn't matter how many we offer or how many different ones. Like, we teach everything through Minecraft, mainly because the kids love Minecraft, right? And they love to learn when they're in Minecraft. And it doesn't matter what you're trying to teach them, they'll run with it because you've connected them to something that's meaningful and engaging to them. And so anything is possible under that scenario. So I really appreciate that piece of the conversation. I agree with you 100% because it's incredibly powerful. And when those kids are turned on, there's nothing that they won't go out and learn for the sake of being part of the engagement, whatever that happens to be, that they've rolled their sleeves up and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm all in, right? They'll run with it 1,000 different ways. Which brings me, I want to make sure that we spend a little bit of time talking about the way you think about not the content, but the who is providing that expertise, right? Because I think that's the other piece that's really intriguing to me and always has been about the way OutSchool works. So I want to have you sort of share with our listeners sort of what that perspective is in terms of the way you think about, because the premise of it is that anybody who can teach a thing that they know that they're an expert on that they love, right? And so back to the idea around, you know, shortages or people leaving the profession of education, the reality is we have an entire planet filled with people that are experts on something.
Totally. And, you know, that's what we're trying to harness throughout school with our marketplace model, which can offer that tremendous choice. And also the online formats that we support, where you can get access to that tremendous choice beyond the content or teachers that you have available locally. And, you know, it's important to set, you know, some kind of general quality bar, not in the same way that schools do, which is overly narrow, because there's so much knowledge, you know, outside of school that we can bring to play without school. But it's very important to provide some kind of quality bar because, you know, in an era of very open choice, parents still want to know that their kids are going to be safe. They still want to know that there's been some vetting done to ensure that the teacher is going to provide the experience that they've promised to provide. And so, you know, we provide that. But what we don't require is, you know, being a certified teacher. So we have plenty of certified teachers on our site. And, you know, they love it because they're able to practice their craft without some of the restrictions of traditional environments. But we also allow folks to come on board if they have specific knowledge that they're excited to share with kids. They have some aptitude and experience working with groups of kids. And, you know, they've shown through our process that they're able to, you know, put together a coherent plan for, you know, how they're going to run their classes. And so that leads us to the process, which is intended to be very lightweight, certainly compared with getting a full-time teaching job, which is, you know, recording a class video where we can see and our team can vet how the teacher will come across to kids. And not just vetting for domain expertise, but also enthusiasm and level of engagement, because that transmits. And then, you know, descriptions and written up class descriptions of what the teacher would like to share, so that our teacher can vet that against our content standards. And so, you know, we do that process so that there is, and of course, a background check to ensure that kind of base level of safety and quality. But what we don't do is insist that you have, you know, be a certified teacher, and we don't insist that you follow any particular curriculum. We have content standards, but that's down to the teacher to provide. And so teachers love it because it gives both enough scaffolding so that they kind of know how to create classes that will be successful and be allowed on the platform, while giving them tremendous freedom compared with traditional environments to teach the classes that they always wanted to teach in the way that they want to teach, and find the niche of families for whom that really resonates.
I think that that's a really critically important element, the way that you have it crafted, because again, you're tapping into this natural human talent that literally it exists everywhere. And we know that, you know, students are going to respond to different people in different ways. That's the other thing that I think we lose sight of when we only have so many teachers that we see in any given day. And if we don't resonate with 2/3 of them, well, wow, what a lot of wasted time in our day. So I like the potential of, you know, students being able to not just choose, but also then to be able to find a fit. And I would assume that you've got students that, you know, are repeaters with individual instructors because they just find they love that class, they love that topic, but I bet just as much they love that individual.
100%. You know, the connection between a student and a teacher is a critical thing. And it also is part of what's so important about offering that choice. Because, you know, when I was growing up, if you had a teacher, a math teacher, say that was just your teacher. And if you didn't like them or connect with them or resonate with them or didn't like the style, tough. That was it. And then you get the situation where kids might think they're bad at math because they didn't connect or resonate with the particular teacher. Or they just weren't in the mood for doing math at, you know, 10 a.m. in the morning, but that had been fine in the afternoon. And so you've got generations of kids who've grown up thinking they're good at something or bad at something. And it's completely arbitrary, biased, and unscientific. And what if you were to run the test and try a different method of learning math with a different teacher? Would that kid have started to thrive? I vividly remember a moment in my childhood where I got really into chemistry at one point. And then the next year we switched teachers and I didn't like it and then dropped it at the first opportunity. And yeah, there is varying quality amongst teachers, but it's also not necessarily the case that the second teacher was bad.
Right.
It just might have not been the best for me. And so the ability to personalize really helps, not just from a content perspective, but also from that teacher learner connection perspective. That's super, super important.
It is. Relationships matter. And as kids are developing, and we know, like, especially by the time kids get to middle school, you know, that 14 to 16 sort of space, 13, 14, their brains are just going through crazy, crazy development, right? And so even from one moment to the next, right, there's just so much going on in adolescence. And we just need to recognize that, to your point, it's not always this, that, or the other. So I want to be really, really mindful of our time, and just sort of follow up with sort of one last thing, if we could. If you think about what you're seeing in the last 9 years of your journey, what do you see as the next great influencer, if you will, in the way we, as a set of global citizens, think about education? Where do you sort of see the next big sort of pusher influencer going to come from?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. You know, I don't think this is the one, but you know, I've got to mention AI, because many people think that is going to be the trend that really unlocks change in education. And I agree, but with a nuance. I actually think a lot of the benefits of current present day capabilities and benefits of AI as, say, a tutor or a replacement are overblown. Maybe some of those benefits accrue over time. But what's more interesting and important, I think, is the fact that AI is, again, going to transform our workplace, our adult society. And this will continue to exacerbate the divergence that parents experience between where the world is going and what the traditional education system is able to offer, and increase the anxiety and uncertainty about what we should teach our kids given the fast change in the world. And if you can't predict the future because of fast change like AI, you better not over-specialize. You better focus on more fundamental attributes and the love of learning, developing that curiosity. So whatever the world throws at kids, they feel confident and able and have the right scaffolding to learn what they need to learn. That's the most important thing. And then if you take that mental model, so the reason AI is interesting is because of this fast change in the world, which is going to cause great anxiety. Then you've also got to look at other social changes in the world. I see a connection between what we see in our political ecosystem, what we see in world events, as being both symptoms of very difficult but sometimes necessary societal change. And that is part of the future that we're going to have to prepare our kids for, and it's part of the evidence that things are going to look completely different in 20 years' time, in 40 years' time. And there's really no point, or it's risky, far riskier to hold on to our current mental models of education, believing that they'll just work. That's far riskier than trying other things for your child. And so that's the kind of trend. It's not a specific influencer. It's more that you've got to lift your head up and look at the world around you and think, is this traditional model really going to prepare kids for the future? I think if you really think about that, I don't think there's many people who would say yes.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So thank you very much for that. You know, Amir, we really appreciate you taking time out of your day to chat with us, to share with us about OutSchool. We will encourage all of our listeners, if you want to know more, go to the website. There's tons of information there. And if you can't find what you're looking for, let us know, and we will get you in contact with somebody there who can help you. So again, thank you so much, Amir. Really appreciate you taking time out of your day.
Thank you. Really appreciate you and your listeners, and really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.